The following podcast is a work of fiction. All characters are the creation of Peter Williams. Any resemblance to someone living or dead is purely coincidental. Thank you.
News. Bad news. Carried across space and time to a tower overlooking our world. How does one react to such news? Cold indifference or heart-wrenching tears? I guess it depends upon the individual. And how will you respond? As we delve deeper into this Tentacle Tuesday, I know that personally, I'll grab some popcorn and enjoy the show. Speaking of, let me remind you that this podcast may contain images of graphic violence, child endangerment, and naughty, salty language. Now, together, let's dim the lights, grab our tentacles, and rejoin our friends with Chapter 3, Bad News.
The news came to Maggie on the wind. A sparrow carried it. Her unique relationship with birds allowed her not only to take their shape, but to understand their tongue. The sparrow landed on her index finger as Maggie looked across the battlement and then across the forest, the moon barely lighting the world below. She looked in its eyes as it tweeted, tilting its head back and forth. As it sung, Maggie could feel her heart breaking. Gripping the wood table in front of her, she swallowed hard. "Thank you, my little friend," Maggie whispered, and then extended her hand in the air so that it could fly off. Getting her thoughts together, she felt something wet roll down her cheek. Tears? Was she actually crying? It wasn't something she had done much of. Embarrassed, she headed towards her private chambers. As she reached it, she took the skeleton key from around her neck and turned the heavy iron lock. She pushed the heavy door open and grabbed some matches. Lighting some candles and using one as a lantern, she turned to her bookcase. Scanning the tiles, she smirked. Curses, teleportation, lycanthropy, and the lies of men. Things, relics of her past. Why she had kept them? That was a mystery even to herself. Finally, she found the correct book. A wine red photo album. It made a crackling noise as she pulled it from the shelves. The aged plastic on the binder and the photos inside felt stiff under her fingers. With a rare sense of caution and care, she began to flip through the pages. She nearly laughed at the first picture inside. She was standing in a black dress in front of Jonah's parents, the scowl on her face saying everything. Pulling it out of its sleeve and picking it up so she could see it better, she thought back to that day. A warm spring morning, the sun catching the fresh leaves, giving the world an illuminated jigsaw puzzle look. Mikal unfolded his wings as he extended his hand towards a small ranch. Maggie turned to him in protest. "You want me to do what?" she snapped at the archangel. "I want you to stay here with the Hollanders," Mikal replied. Maggie rolled her eyes as she adjusted the weighty backpack on her shoulder. "I thought I wasn't going to be punished for my transgressions," she scowled. "You aren't being punished, Maggie," he assured her. "Uriel and I believe that you need some time with regular folk." She gives him a nasty glance and mutters, "It would have been better if Nicole had killed me." "Give them a chance, Maggie. They're good people," Mikal insisted. "Plus, they will understand the situation better than anyone else. Remember, they raised Jonah."
"Oh, great. No offense, but the cloaked look isn't really my style."
Mikal laughed. "I'll make a note." Mikal and Uriel were correct, of course. Within 3 months, she had become part of their family. And after a year, she was able to stay in human form long enough to even enjoy the holidays. Staying with them made her start longing for a normal life, a life neither she nor Jonah could ever have. So 2 springs after arriving, she bade them farewell and came to the tower outside of time to train. Like Jonah, she needed to get stronger. The great clock chimed, making her jump. It was near midnight here. She folded the pitcher and placed it in her dress next to her breast. It would be safe here. Returning to the battlement, she viewed the stars. They seemed a little dimmer somehow. Then, spreading her arms out like wings, she transformed into a crow and flew off into the night. She would head to Holly Springs. There was something about that little town that pulled her there. Then, once there, she'd seek a church. She wanted to pray for a few minutes. Then, she'd have to divinate where Jonah was. Poor Jonah. Once more, she'd have to break his heart. Although, which is worse, nearly killing him, or to tell him that Joan, his mother, was dead. Now, he, like her, was an orphan. Thomas, his father, had passed 6 years ago. Maggie circled over the town. A stone church stood at its center. What's this? She pondered as she neared. Something gleamed near the steeple. Maggie swooped down lower to get a good look. Uriel stood on its ledge, defying gravity. She gazed across the city and then up at Maggie as she descended. Folding her wings behind her, she turned and looked towards Maggie as she landed.
Still taking crow form?
Uriel asked, with a slight hint of concern in her voice. Maggie shrugged her shoulders.
It's easier to travel like this, she replied, as she took human form. Yes, Uriel acknowledged. Wings are truly a delight.
Silence filled the air as now they both looked over the city. Finally, Uriel broke the silence.
I see you received my news. About Joan? Yes, I received it. Maggie,
Uriel's tone became firm.
Someone new is on the scene. Someone we overlooked because we all presumed he had ended when Ikyatsu wiped out his family. One of the Thomas family? We think so, although there is someone else that was involved,
Uriel confirmed.
Who? Claire is dead. Michael and Wendy weren't real and... We think it's Henry Thomas,
Uriel replied.
All that was left of him was a head,
Maggie snapped.
Yes, I know the story, Maggie. So you think somehow Henry is at the heart of this?
Uriel handed Maggie some pictures. A white van sat three houses from the Hollander house. In it was a man wearing a white jumpsuit with the words, Tentacle World Order.
They moved in 3 months ago. They're responsible for cleaning at the aquarium and other local residents. Isn't that a little obvious? Maggie replied. Sometimes hiding in plain sight is the best way not to get noticed. Remember, your flower shop used to be an instrument of darkness. Does this mean?
Maggie was immediately suspicious that Cassandra was once again on the prowl.
No. So far we have not seen anything which suggests she survived.
But, Maggie objected.
But, Uriel smiled. Yes, we should take every precaution. What's your next move?
Maggie asked Uriel.
I can't really say, and no, it's not because I don't trust you. It's because I honestly don't know yet. And I still get the joy of being Jonah's messenger girl again,
Maggie grumbled, still hoping Uriel would take the burden.
It's what you signed up for, Mags,
Uriel responded.
And by the way, I left the church doors open for you below. I will be back for the funeral. You're not the only one who is fond of Joan.
She watched as Uriel spread her wings and ascended into the night sky, her own head swimming from the information Uriel had passed on. The Tentacle World Order, huh? She would need to do her own digging if any of those cultists had survived and were once more on the move. Maggie jumped from the steeple towards the steps below. Some pigeons cooed and scattered as she landed. Two ivy-colored doors with green ivy wreaths stood ajar. Pushing them open, she walked down between the dark, varnished wood pews and toward the kneeler surrounding the altar. Bowing, she turned towards a rack of candles. Three small votives flickered, and for a brief moment, Maggie panicked. She needed money to do this properly, and money was something she didn't carry. She was about to excuse herself and leave when she noticed a silver dollar and a note.
I've got your back,
Uriel. With a half smile, she took the coin and deposited it. Placing her hands together, she closed her eyes and quickly found herself in a grass field under a warm sun.
The garden?
Birds sung, and the sound of a river flowing immediately met her ears.
Why am I here?
Maggie asked herself, astonished not only that she was in the garden, but she was dressed in all white. A deep, warm voice rose up behind her, and she froze. We don't get a chance to talk much, do we? It rumbled. It was unfamiliar, but somehow it made her heart race with joy. Slowly she turned to the man who stood there.
I'm sorry?
Actually, the voice said, I should be saying that to you.
Who?
Maggie, the voice continued. A moment is coming that will change the dynamics of my creation. The words, my creation, rang in Maggie's ear, and she immediately knelt. A nail-scarred hand reached for hers. Please, stand. Walk with me for a little bit. We have some things to go over.
Yes, sir.
She replied, and the two went off together. Usually, she was met here by a strange silver-haired girl, or by Sam, but him? The word? How do you react to that? As evening settled over the garden and the distant mountain range, Maggie settled down on a stone bench and watched as the streaks of light headed up towards home. It brought a warm smile to her face, and she wondered if Joan was among them. Then, sensing another presence, Maggie stood up. The form was familiar, and yet not. He was tall, almost brutish-looking. His skin was dark, and the imperfections that still marred it told Maggie exactly who it was.
That's a good look for you,
she said, and the man responded in his signature gruff voice.
They felt it would be good for you to have someone more familiar guide you back,
Mr. Alistair smiled.
I like the wings, Maggie smiled and returned, but I'm a little confused.
How so?
Didn't Jonah absorb you?
The large man laughed.
He ate a remnant of what I was. Here we are made whole. We are completed.
A few minutes of silence passed between them.
It's hard, isn't it?
Maggie nodded.
Here, I don't have the weight of life on my shoulders. I don't need to worry about monsters, a people that frankly can be worse than monsters.
And here, Alistair added, you don't need to tell Jonah about Joan.
Yeah,
Maggie replied.
She gave me something to give to you.
Wait, what?
It's here in this box.
He held it up. It was small, and in typical Hollander fashion, wrapped in a manner that only a bomb could open. Alistair gave it to her and said,
you're not to open it. You're to put it away until the day you know is the right time.
How? How am I supposed to know that?
Alistair laughed again.
I guess you'll find out.
Great.
She looked at the curious package before finally tucking it away.
Ready?
Alistair asked.
No, but lingering here won't resolve things. Let's go.
Maggie took the big man's hand. It was the first time in a long time she felt like a little girl. She actually wanted to kick off her shoes and run through the flowers. As if sensing those feelings, Mr. Alistair turned to her and said,
go ahead. I won't tell.
Alistair grinned. So Maggie did just that. She kicked off her shoes and ran through the flowers as thousands of fireflies rose around her, as if she was dancing in the very stars. Alistair watched. He understood the emotions, the mixture of joy and sorrow. He himself had carried that for centuries. Finally, as the sun's last gleam disappeared, Maggie collapsed in a heap and looked at Alistair's somber face.
Okay, Big Red. Do it.
And with that, once more, Maggie was sitting in front of a bunch of candles. She was still in the process of lighting hers. It struck her how the little lights reminded her of the fireflies in the field, little prayers being lifted up to take hold of the dark night sky. Now, back to work and relaying the message to Jonah.
Tears. Rare tears. An old friend. A strange package. And a warning from the word himself. It must be a heavy burden for someone to carry. And we won't get much rest either. For next week, Jonah races to get Arista someplace safe. Someplace eerily familiar. As I get the sheer joy to present Chapter 4. Echoes.